Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be here with you once again at OC Talk Radio. And I believe our show today may be one of the most unusual shows that I personally have ever done. And the reason is I know almost nothing about our guest, which is, you know, I'm not overly prepared, but I like to be somewhat prepared, and I'm quasi somewhat prepared. Our guest prepared. I may need repair. Will Crist is our guest today, and we have had the similarities that Will and I have had in our background make it an interesting interplay that we may have. Will is a priest. I was a minister. Will is a consultant and an executive coach. I was a consultant and an executive coach. And he currently has his own podcast titled, I love this title, The Pilgrim on the 405. And for those of you that don't know, in Southern California, the 405 is a 8 or 10 lane parking lot. So there's lots of pilgrimage to be done on the 405. So what we're going to get today is part of a really unrehearsed and almost totally unprepared conversation of two guys who have experienced life through three similar, yet I'm sure unique combinations of life choices. Let's discover what Will Crist and Charlie Hedges have in common, as well as discovering the wonder of our similarities at the same time, naturally unique and distinct. So let's do it. Will Crist, welcome to the next chapter.
Well, thanks, Charlie. Thanks. You know, you said that we're unprepared. I think we've been preparing for this for maybe 70 plus years.
Yes, we both. Yeah, I am proud to say I reached the magical 70 last month. So I now consider myself on the way to being a wise person.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the best age.
You know, I look at that. Paul and I talked about that last week, and I did my take on the seasons of life. Mm-hmm. And that it begins, life begins in spring at 20 years old, and you're casting seeds, and then you're finding what you can grow on. Then summer in life is, you know, 35 to 55 to 60, where you're in your high productive years and having children, doing all the things that you do. But the season that gets ignored, and that's the season you and I are in right now, is autumn. It is the most beautiful season. You know, I think just naturally, it's the most beautiful season. The colors are vibrant. It's a little bit cooler. Things are a little bit slowed down for us. You know, I don't quite have the energy I had at 45, but I still have plenty of energy at 70. I'm not bothered by that. But we're in a, like you said, this is the best season. This is a great season, a great time.
Let me tell you a little bit about my recent experience with my coach, Dan Sullivan. Can I do that?
Is that your exercise coach?
No. This is my entrepreneurial coach.
Oh, okay.
Dan has, for the last 45 years, has taught over 18,000 entrepreneurs around the world.
No way.
And so I'd been watching Dan for 4, 5, 6, 8 years, reading his material, thinking, you know, I really want to do that someday. I really want to do that. Well, a year and a half ago, I said, it's time. I have the time now. I have the resources. I'm going to do it. So I called up and I said, okay, Dan, I want to work with you. And he said, okay. So he said, the last time you can work with me in my program is called the 10X program. I said, 10X? 10X? Dan, at this time I was 71. I said, Dan, I'm 71. Now, I'm working with the entrepreneurial operating system, and I can see where, you know, 5 years, 20 clients each year. You know, 5 years, I will have worked with 40, 50, 60 companies, and I will have put aside a significant amount of money. I said, why do I need to 10X anything?
Yeah, and just so our audience is not always business oriented. 10x means 10 times.
10 times.
10 times.
10 times something. Yeah. And I said, why do I have to 10x anything? And he said, oh, well, sounds to me like you have a 5-year program. And I said, well, I hadn't thought about that. And he said, well, he said, you're 71, you got a 5-year program. He said, I'm 73. And since I'm going to live to 156, I have at least 2 25-year programs ahead of me. So what is your 25-year program? And that was like a sledgehammer to my forehead. And I mean, my response was, here's my credit card, let's get going. Now, some of the students that he has are people like Dave Asprey, Bulletproof Coffee. Dave's going to live to 180. That's what he says. Peter Diamandis, going to live to 145.
That's one of his clients. Diamandis.
Peter Diamandis and all of Peter's group. All of these folks are not saying, oh, I'm 75, I'm losing energy. They're saying, oh, I'm not an energy, I don't have the energy I had before. I wonder what changed. And that's where they start talking about Bulletproof Coffee, True Niagen, vitamin D, all of these things, because they're going to live a long time. And what they're saying is, not only do we know now how to live longer, but the longer we live, the more things are going to be in place to live even longer.
That's true.
And yeah. So the question is, how do I want to live the next 25 years? And if I'm going to live to 125, which I believe is possible, given the changes that are in flux right now.
According to Peter, yeah.
All right, so if I'm going to live to 125, what do I want to do? What impact do I want to make? And then looking back at 100, what do I want to be happy, proud that I've done? And that's what's on my mind right now.
Yeah, I like that. What have I believe in the impact. I think that's important. What kind of impact can we make? Can we make a difference in the world? And can we help other people? But what am I passionate about?
Absolutely.
What am I going to truly enjoy? If you don't enjoy it, it's not worth doing.
If you're not bouncing out of the bed in the morning, you haven't really dug down to find out what you were sent here to do.
That's interesting. So give me some ideas. What are some of the things that you want to do, the key things that you want to do in the next 25 years?
Well, what's on my mind right now, and I haven't put it down, but I'm playing around with it. What if over the next 25 years, a group of people in Orange County identified 1,000 companies to help them be dramatically better? All right, so you think about that. Let's just think 1,000 companies, the average annual revenue of the 15,000, right? So 1,000 times 15,000 is?
150,000? 1,500,000.
A little bit more. $15 million times 1,000.
Oh, $15 billion.
$15 million.
Oh, $15 million.
It's about the average, the company that I work with, 10 to 250 employees.
Don't ask me to do math. Well, you've already done the math.
That's a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
What if we were just to take those companies and increase their revenue by 10%? That's a significant amount of money. What if we took those and said, well, these companies, if it tend to be like 100 employees per company, 1,000 companies. Increase them by 10%. That's a lot of jobs. And that's exciting to me. That's a 10 times project.
That's a great project. So it really, the ultimate goal of your project is employment?
Employment, revenue. Just think about what happens if that revenue gets into the ecosphere of Orange County. You have more investment money available. You have more money for taxes. You have better school. All of that comes to making the culture better. Now, you think of Octane, which works on startups right now, technology startups and medical device, biomedical startups. When they finish that, they're on their own. that's the place that we can begin to make significant changes and help them grow faster, more effectively, more efficiently.
And that's what you do, is you consult with the leaders to help them do that.
Well, I can only work with maybe full-time for me is 20 companies. So
that's a lot of companies.
Well,
I've never had full 20 companies at one time.
That's what full-time for me would be. Now, there are 350 people like me doing the same thing I do around the country, and it'll shortly become 700. Right now, we have about 12 of those in Southern California. So we can create more of these EOS implementers who can do the same kind of things. But the goal would be 1,000 companies that are dramatically more effective, more efficient, and if they're biomedical, they're helping their patients have better outcomes.
Yes, my wife works with a lot of biomedical companies.
But it's really helping them to become so much better. Now, that's something I'm playing around with for my 25-year goal. What are you playing around with for your 25-year goal?
Well, what am I playing around with for my 25? I don't have a 25-year goal.
Because?
Because, honestly, I'm ceasing in my need for productivity. I'm ceasing in my desire for it, and my desire to spend more time with my family, more time. I am really involved, deeply involved, almost an employee with this nonprofit.
And what is the 25-year goal for that nonprofit? Wells of Life.
Yeah, that's what the...
What is it?
That's what the CEO and I, have to work through.
I know Nick very well. And Nick and I will be working together on a number of different projects about that. What's the 25-year goal? Is it just to stay in Uganda? Is it to move into other countries? What is the 25-year goal? What would it look like if everything fell into place 25 years from now?
If everything fell into place in 25 years from now in Wells of Life, I would probably not be, at this point, an advocate of moving into other countries.
Okay.
I would just say Uganda is big enough.
Okay.
If we could solve the water problem in Uganda.
How many 40, villages? How 40, many villages?
43 million people.
Okay. How many wells?
How many wells would it take? Well, if one well does 1,000 people,
okay,
then you would have 43 million, and its population is going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not great at math off the top of my head.
All right, but that's my challenge, is to come up with those, that 25-year goal or a 10-year goal, but a long-term goal. Then the next question would be, what's our 3-year picture? What's it going to look like a short 3 years from now?
Yeah.
And once we have that, and everybody, you wanted to talk about vision. Vision means everybody in the organization knowing exactly where the organization's going and how it's going to get there. So this is what it'll look like 3 years from today. And then once we know that, we all agree upon it, then what's our plan for the next 12 months? And once we agree upon that, what are the 3 to 5 things that have to get done in the next 12 months to move toward that 3 years? Then what are we going to do the next 90 days?
In your experience, who makes that decision?
The leadership team. Now, the visionary can say, this is what I want. And once the visionary or the owner or the CEO is very clear about what they want, then they find people who can see it with them. I have a client right now. The visionary is saying, I want it to be an $8 million company. Her team, she tells me, is saying, we can't see that. We got to be a $6 million company. And she was getting ready to say, well, I guess that's what we have to have. And I said to her, maybe you got the wrong people. If they can't see it or they don't know how to go do that, maybe there's people in the world who could see it and can help you go get that. But that's who the visionary recruits to be on that leadership team.
Well, don't you think there can be a sort of remodeling or refreshing the visionary's vision, because sometimes visionaries are really unrealistic?
Well, all right, that's the conversation that goes on. And what I want to always ask is, if we had the right people, doesn't mean good or bad, but if we had the right people, 100% right people right seat in the leadership team, could we accomplish everything the visionary has? Maybe not. Maybe they just don't exist in the world. But I put out for you Elon Musk. Can we get to Mars?
Well, I've worked with SpaceX.
All right.
They absolutely believe they're going to get
it. Yes. All right. Now,
and that is the one thing about what Elon has done.
Yes.
Every single employee, even people sweeping the floors,
that's
are
right.
thinking
100%.
They all wear T-shirts, 100% oriented.
Top to bottom, we believe we can get there. We can see it. All right. Now, if you didn't have those people, you'd never get to Mars. Now, Elon is like Dan Sullivan. It's not a matter of whether we actually, if he actually lives to 156. And for Elon, it's not actually, if he doesn't get to Mars, that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is right now, what are we living into? And Elon is living into a Tesla in every garage on the moon and lots of tiles, lots of solar tiles.
Solar tiles
right?
on homes,
right.
or businesses.
And Dan Sullivan will say the same thing. I'm not going to hold up a banner that I got to 156. And by the way, 156 means that he will have lived one full century, been alive for one full century from 2001 to 2100. All right, that's his goal. Now, so he and what he says is it's not a matter of me having to get there. If I don't, I fail. It's how I'm living right now, which means he's up in the morning burning 1,000 calories before breakfast every day in order to keep his body going until he's 156. Like Peter Diamandis, he's got a regimen of what he eats. I mean, what supplements he takes. Like Bulletproof Coffee, Dave Asprey, he's got very clear about what he eats and what he doesn't eat, all aimed at 156. He right now has a program of writing one short book every 90 days. And that's a book that can be read in 1 hour, which is the time that it would fly from one of his offices in Toronto to Chicago. All right? But that's how he is staying on target to be productive at 156. And it's the same way. Once we get really clear about where we're going, we find the people who want to go there and have the capacity, the God-given skill set, to help us get there.
You know, that sounds very familiar with a book I wrote 25 years ago that was titled Getting the Right Things Right, Personal Strategies for Reinventing the Life You Want.
Why not?
And it was based on four principles. I call them the four P's: passion, purpose, people, and power.
And why does that stop at 69?
It doesn't stop at 69.
Oh.
No, it doesn't. But it has been. It's not quite so active in the business environment. I really don't. I grew a bit wary of the business environment. I like the nonprofit environment.
I don't see any big difference between business and nonprofits, because most successful businesses, to my way of thinking, are not there to make money. That's the investor is trying to make money. Most businesses are there. Successful businesses are there to serve somebody else.
Successful businesses are there to serve somebody
All right.
else.
And what is the difference between that and the nonprofit?
There is no difference.
So getting really clear on what our purpose is, what's our passion, our cause, what is it that we do as a business, and focusing on that, it's not to make another dollar for the owner. There's something else that draws those people together. I saw it in the last 2 days at the Octane MTIF conference, where it had all these people who were dedicated to creating new products and services in the biotech field in order to improve patient results and patient care. That's amazing. I mean, just amazing to see this. That was their intention over and over again. I had a company that blew my mind when it came down to talking about what's the purpose of this construction firm. They were in Dayton, Ohio, and I was working with them remotely, and I said, okay, so let's talk about your purpose. They said, oh, we're very clear about that. Really? What is the purpose? I said, we have 125 people in our company, and our purpose as a company is to make certain that every one of those people retire successfully, financially independent. Well, I thought you were a construction company. That's what we do in order to accomplish our real purpose.
Yeah, but then isn't that sort of in conflict with your idea of people having a purpose of accomplishing things past retirement?
Well, that was what their purpose was. Now, what the folks did after they finished working for the construction company, it seems to me that's where the real challenge for them is. Now they have a platform. They don't have to worry about what am I going to do to put food on the table. Now they've got a place to really begin asking, what do I love doing? What's my passion? What do I want to do for the next 25 years? What kind of impact do I want to make?
Clues or guidelines do you help people at 70 years old, retired, and really don't know what to do with themselves?
Well, I would think the first thing, I mean, you have it in your book. You talked about it. I mean, what is your purpose? What's your passion? What are you excited about? What turns you on?
Do you know how many people don't know that?
Well, do you know how many people die because they didn't have any reason to get up in the morning?
No, I don't.
Well,
it's a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's a lot.
Well, I mean, think for a moment.
So I get this question asked of me quite frequently. How do I discover my purpose and my passion? I have purpose is, I define it by two simple criteria. Mm-hmm. Now, it's much more complicated than two simple criteria, mm-hmm. but one, what do you do well, mm-hmm. and what do you love to do?
Mm-hmm. We call that your unique ability. What is your unique ability that are gifted at doing?
Right.
And when you find that, unique ability, that's what you want to do every day. You want to do that. Plus, everybody's coming back to you saying, you are great at that. We really love you doing that. Now, in a religious sense, that used to be called, what are your spiritual gifts?
Right.
Right? And spiritual gifts programs were, you talk about here's a list of 12, 15, 30, wherever you want to find it in the Bible, but here's a list of spiritual gifts. Which one of these turn you on? And then let's see if you get any feedback from people that, yes, you do a good job at that. But it's this dialogue between what's going on inside you and what's an effective contribution that's getting good feedback. That's where you begin to find your passion and you begin to attract people to help you do it.
Yeah, I think, I believe as you insinuated just now that your passion is a derivative of your purpose.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's what you become passionate about. And people are thinking often when it comes to passion, not passionate about doing something and providing something for people, but they get into this artistic realm. Well, what am I passionate about? Am I passionate about painting or writing or some sort of artistic field? And passion is so much more.
Oh, passion is what turns me on.
Yeah.
What am I excited about? I can tell you, I just came away from a 3-hour meeting with a local manufacturing company, and I was so excited about solving two issues for them. We spent 3 hours working on two issues, and when we finished, it was like, wow, this was so helpful because we've been struggling with that for 6 months. Part of my unique ability is to simplify and get it onto the whiteboard and let them work on it and keep asking questions. That's part of my unique ability. I love doing that. And I get a lot of good feedback from people that I work with about how effective that was in helping them move forward. So that, for me, I do that for the next 25 years, I'm having a ball.
Don't you think that's a almost a prerequisite, but it's not necessarily popular, and that's the ability popular among consultants. You know, when you talk, I don't want to bad name companies, but when you talk about the Deloittes and the Andersons and all of the big companies, mm-hmm. they come in with a boatload of expertise, mm-hmm. a boatload of personnel, and a boatload of costs mm-hmm. that are involved with it. And yet, I think that the ability to simplify mm-hmm. is probably one of the most important criteria of a consultant.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not a consultant. I'm an implementer of a program. And this was put together by Gino Wickman in Detroit about 17 years ago because he was struggling with the same thing that I was struggling with for years, is why is it that some people get what they want from their businesses and others don't? And when I called him for the first time, because one of my clients that I'd worked with wound up getting his company, got sold because they were doing so well, and they came back a year later and said, you know, Will, I'm now the GM of not only my company, but now four companies that they bought. And he said, we're using this thing called EOS. And he said, this is so helpful. And I asked him why. He said, because it simplifies. So I picked up the phone and called Gino and said, let's talk. And I discovered that what he discovered was that there's six key competencies that if you are strong in every one of those, a lot of the 133 problems that most businesses feel all fall into place. And it's everybody having a clear sense of what the vision is, shared by all. We all know where we're going, how we're going to get there. You have 100% of the people, right people in the right seat. Right people means they agree with the values of the company. Right seat means they get it, they want to be doing that job, and they have the capacity to do it.
Yeah.
Getting the right data that you can use to make decisions. So it's not based on opinions or industry norms, but it's the data about our business. And then issues, because once you get really clear about the vision, you got the right people, you got data coming in, the whole company becomes transparent. And when you have transparency, all the problems, all the obstacles, all the hindrances bubble up, and your job is to learn how to set those issues up and knock them down forever. So coming up with a way of dealing with those issues and then processes. And that's one of the things we did today, was get really clear. The problem in that company is they don't have a clear set of processes for their manufacturing and for their communication, for their meetings all the way through the organization. So getting really clear of the processes, and finally, traction. Those are the six areas, that the six key competencies that when they're strong, the company succeeds beyond its expectations. And that's true of a profit organization and a nonprofit organization as well.
Oh, absolutely. They overlap.
That's right.
Yeah. That's I had an opportunity. It seemed like when I was working with, I did a lot of work in oil, mm-hmm. and it seemed like I always had the engineering groups. Mm-hmm. The engineering groups would come to me and ask me to come in and help them create much of what you're talking about, mm-hmm. create a vision, but a lot of it was processes, and a lot mm-hmm. of it was process-oriented. Mm-hmm. And engineers, in my history, in my personal history, have a very difficult time making a decision because they never have enough information.
Right, never have enough data.
They never have enough data.
Right.
So, what I would do is I would create these really simple processes,
yes.
these simple spreadsheets, put them up on a whiteboard, work it through, and we'd make a $5 million decision in,
right. That's right.
in 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they had been working on it for 90 days.
Right, and that's why
and
I say
even close to
that's
it.
Why I say I'm not a consultant. I have a system that Gino Wickman put together called Traction, called the Entrepreneurial Operating System. I'm just a dumb guy with a marker. I follow that system. Now, they can choose what parts they want to use and what parts they don't want to use, but the best practices are use the whole system. And for me, I just ask a bunch of questions because I really don't know. I'm not a manufacturing consultant. I'm not a financial consultant. I'm not an HR consultant. I'm a dumb guy with a marker. I'm going to get it up on the board, and you're going to tell me how to solve it.
A facilitator.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I viewed my role primarily as a facilitator, and every now and then I would consult because if I happened to know something, but it would always be open. You know, don't take my word for it. This is your choice. I want to move into another subject, but before I do, we need to take a big quick break. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And I am honored to have with me Will Christ, who at 71 years old...
Oh, I'm 73 now.
Oh, geez, an old man. He's got 3 years on me, so it's not an old man. And he's got a 25-year life plan, which is intriguing. And he plans to live much longer than that. But what I want to talk to him about, we've been talking about what it takes to execute a life that matters and execute a business. We've been largely on business, and I'm going to change this over to individuals rather than businesses, and because these principles that apply for business absolutely apply for individual life. And you know, I want to talk about change. Well, you, after college, it seemed, elected a career path of priesthood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then at some point, you moved to facilitating, helping organizations understand how they can be more profitable, how they can be more impactful and effective, and be more cohesive.
All right, so let's think about that. After college, I went on to seminary, and went back to where I came from in Texas, a diocese of West Texas, Episcopal Diocese of West Texas, and was ordained a priest. Now, there's lots of different ways that priests exercise their ministry. And I wound up in South Texas in a little town called Edinburgh, where I happened to grow up as the vicar of a small congregation, which I found out later on had been on the list of congregations to be closed because they were not very effective. So I, not knowing that, went in and did exactly the things you just got through talking about. We helped get a clear vision about where we wanted to go. We talked about holding each other accountable for accomplishing the various steps of that vision, and that became a self-supporting parish. It started a day school, which I met my wife. She was the head of the day school that we put together, and it's still functioning very well. What is it now? 40 years later, as a self-supporting parish and a day school in Edinburgh, Texas. Now, what happened along the way was as I moved forward in this clergy career in congregations is I found that the larger and longer that congregation had been there, the more bureaucratic it was and the slower it wanted to move. Now, fortunately for me, that little town in Edinburgh was 225 miles away from San Antonio, which was the sea city, which was where the bishop was. And they didn't really care a whole lot about us, but they did support us. When I needed a typewriter, the bishop was there a week later with a typewriter for us. It was one of those electric typewriters, right? But he was there. He supported us moving forward. But we were far enough away so that nobody really cared what we did. So we were free to be very entrepreneurial. And what happened to me as I got fired a couple of times, I began to realize, wait a minute, I'm an entrepreneur. Church, at least the Episcopal Church, does not seek out entrepreneurial clergy.
No.
In fact, if you're entrepreneurial, you may not fit in the typical...
That's pretty much true with any major religious organization.
I was in the particular one was the Episcopal Church.
Yeah.
And so that meant to me, if I'm going to continue to be a priest, I have to find a way to exercise my ministry without getting fired.
So this is it seems like you came up with vision, traction, and health long before that became...
That's what I said. When I called Gino, I found out that we'd been working on the same project. Why is it that some leaders of organizations get what they want and others don't? And so what I did is I discovered my ministry is with entrepreneurs. Now, there are some entrepreneurial clergy that I work with, but there's also entrepreneurial business people. Now, between you and me, Charlie, I believe that if Jesus were in my shoes, he'd be doing what I'm doing.
Well, that's wonderful that you believe that.
Because I'm helping people get really clear about what they want and how they're going to get there. And it's really freeing them up to move forward. And most often it has to do with purpose, cause, or passion, which to me is the most significant part of being a human being, is doing what you're called to do, what you were sent to do, what you want to be doing.
Yes, and no matter how grandiose or small it is, if this is what Jesus is calling you to do,
yes,
and this is the way you have been gifted, ordainly DNA'd,
yes,
then you are right in line with where you're supposed to be. So let's don't make our audience think, they've got to start this giant corporation.
No. I mean, one of the times that I was fired, I thought I had done something wrong. And I did a year of therapy with a very good friend that turned out to be a very good friend. And at the end, what she helped me to understand was I didn't do anything wrong. It had to do with the organization itself and the leadership. I was doing something right, but it didn't fit with what they wanted. And so that's when I began to look around for where are the places where what I want to do is what that organization wants me to do. And so I would not for the life of me go into every congregation and say, this is what you ought to be doing. But I do ask questions. Do you want to grow? Do you want to? Are you in a place where you want to be helping people to learn what it is to grow into a deeper relationship with Jesus? Do you want to be known as a place that's going to be serving the community? And if it is, how do we do that? And that's what I love about Nick Jordan, because Nick Jordan came to the place where he wasn't successful as a real estate developer.
The depression killed
him. Of course, he didn't. But he didn't make it through that.
No.
And what he discovered was
another passion.
What Jesus wanted him to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm excited about. That's what I love about the Barnabas Group. And that's where I met Nick, was this puts that question out there over and over. What are you called to do?
Now here's a question for our listeners that they can really be helped on. And that is just, we're talking a lot about the concept of change.
Mm-hmm.
This is changing the way you think, changing the way you behave, modifying your passions and clarifying your purpose. But people are afraid of change. Well, people get stuck and get happy in doing what they're doing, even if it's, how did I phrase it, even if it's not really productive, sort of an unproductive or imperfect present is better than an unknown future.
Well, let's think about what we learned in first and second grade. What did we learn? There's a right answer, there's a wrong answer.
Right.
If you get the wrong answer, you've done something bad. All right. Now, in my practice, there is no such thing as failure, ever. We either achieve the goal we set out to do, we either do what we said we would do, or We are learning how to do it. We never fail.
Yes.
It's always we are learning. So for me, change is not, it's not binary. It's the process that we're always moving through. Everything. Think about it. I mean, when we got in our car to come up to the studio today, the temperature was one temperature. When we walk down, the temperature is going to be different. When I was in Laguna this morning, leaving, there was no wind. I got out to Yorba Linda. It was tremendous wind. When I went into the building, when I came out, it had died down. Change is always there. And what our task is, our opportunity is to learn how to live with that change in ourselves and not get caught up on how do I fix it so that it's the same every time. That's the big mistake that we have made. It's how do we adapt? How do we move through this change, which is always there? And who told us that we are supposed to work until 55, 65, 70, and then you stop? Do you know who told us that?
Roosevelt.
Before Roosevelt, it was in Detroit where they said, how are we going to get these people to work for 30 years turning the same bolt every day? Well, here's what we'll do. We will promise them if they go through this rather horrendous life that at the end they'll be able to do anything they want to do because we'll give them this pension. Right?
Yes.
And
yes.
And do you know how they set up the pension rules? They anticipated that no one would live 3 years longer after they're
right.
retired.
At 65.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, where did we get the idea of retirement? In fact, I've learned from Dan Sullivan, never use the word retirement because the word retirement is a call to the universe to come pick up some useless material.
Yeah, I went through that in retirement, and I really went through, I did quite a bit of writing on it and podcast on it, and I call it my battle with boredom because mm-hmm. I was so used to doing something and being impactful,
mm-hmm.
and then to move to a situation where what do I do now was a very difficult transition. And I think people entering this so-called, I don't like the phrase retirement either, people entering into what is that phase mm-hmm. are facing the same difficulty.
Yeah, there's no such thing as retirement. There's one of two things. There's either what's the next project or death, right?
You know what you're talking about is what I've been listening to, and I read in Richard Rohr's latest book, The
yes.
Universal Christ.
Yes.
I don't know if you've read
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yes.
It's just, I think it's the most important book
yes.
in Christianity, probably.
Did
in
you
the
hear
last
his podcast
years.
With his three
yes,
people?
I'm
oh,
listening
yes.
to his podcast.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
yes.
Matter of fact, I was listening to it on the way over.
Yes, yes.
Over here. And he talks a lot about transactional versus transformational.
Yes.
And what you're talking about is transformational.
Absolutely.
And historically, we're talking about transactional.
Yes.
And that means tit for tat. You do this.
You get this.
You do this. You get that. Transformational is thinking we need to reorder. It's first order, then reorder. And I've forgotten the third one that goes after that.
I don't know.
There's
about
order, reorder. But we're in the reordering phase. And so we're talking about sort of really adjusting our personality, adjusting our deepest drives, and that we have been inculcated with for 65 years, and say this is not true, and mm-hmm. and we're now finding it as a financial truth that people cannot retire on Social Security, and they need to find some kind of other income unless they've been fortunate to save or be part of a pension.
Well, but that to me, that's part of the change that moves forward. What's my project? What am I doing? I mean, think of Nick Jordan. All right, Nick Jordan wound up with nothing in his bank account, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And many people did as well. What did he do? He took the schools that he had visited with for many years in Uganda, And he said, what do they need? Oh, my goodness. Look at the women here. They're spending their entire life just carrying water. And the water they carry is not healthy.
Oh, if you could see it, you would be...
I understand.
You wouldn't want to dip your fingers in it.
I understand. Yes.
It's that filthy.
Yes.
You wouldn't want
but
to dip your fingers in it.
But that's what they have. And what he said is, I can make a difference. Now, has Nick missed any meals?
Has
he got a roof over his head?
Yeah.
Has he got somebody that he loves and somebody who loves him and something to bounce out of bed in the morning to do? Absolutely. Now, what do you mean I can't just live on my Social Security? Of course not. It's what am I going to make? What kind of contribution am I going to make in the world? I mean, Marcia Sinitar, I was telling Paul before we started, Marcia Sinitar taught us this 30 years ago. Do what you love, the money will follow.
Right.
There is more money out there right now just in grants that are available to solve problems. Every year it goes unused because people haven't connected their hearts to the problems along with their abilities and their skills.
See, that is the move from transactional to transformational.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Rotary Club, Newport Beach Sunrise Rotary Club, is the place in Southern California for the grantsmanship program. We have access to a software program that lists every grant that's available in the country. And all you got to do is go over and start looking for it, and money is available.
Yeah, yeah. It's we have found it's much more complicated than that, in that applying for the grants is a complicated...
That becomes part of the who do we need here,
yes.
Not how to do it. And that's what I have found. It's another thing Dan taught me. It's not a matter of how to do it. It's the who rather than the
right person.
The right person, because there are people out there right now who know how to get grants. They are doing it right now. Finding those people, connecting them with the project, in this case with Uganda and Water, connecting them with that, and then putting to work.
Yeah, exactly.
And how many people right now are saying, gee, I don't know what I'm going to do next, and have those skills?
That would be, yeah, that's really tremendous. I think something really needs to be done for people that have hit this retirement phase and have no idea what they're going to do.
It's telling them there's no such thing as retirement. You got a choice.
Yeah.
You got a choice. Let's find a place where you've got projects that you are bouncing out of bed.
And even if it's not as large and impacting as your projects, it can be family projects. It can be...
Think for a moment. My wife works... One of her tasks is to be in charge of an outreach center in Riverside. And what she found out was the homeless folks, some of them coming out of the park... getting off of meth or alcohol.
Right.
Some of them coming out of traumatized childhoods. Some of them, when she began celebrating birthdays with birthday cakes that were donated, birthdays for people, there were people there who were 40, 50, 60 years old who had never, ever had a birthday party.
Oh, my goodness.
Came out of a foster child program. All right, and where was I just yesterday, hearing from one of the UCI neuroscientists, and his name will come to me in a moment, but what he said was his studies showed that trauma between 0 and 3 years of age in the family can affect that person for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I had always heard, you know, there's the famous comment by Adolf Hitler, who said, give me a child till 7, and I own him for the rest of his life.
Oh, I think the Jesuits said that about as well. So it's that's the whole point, is that if your project, what is passionate for you, is working with your grandchildren, or in my case, my great-grandchild, then that's a passion. That's a project. That is valuable. Yeah. You don't know how much, what a great contribution that can be to that child for whom parents may be in two jobs, and that child may find great satisfaction and great nurturing just in you being there. But if that's your passion, you're going to be bouncing out of the bed in the morning to do that.
Yeah, and you know, I like that, and I think I want to provide clarity too that for our listeners, that for me personally, you were asking for me personally. Mm-hmm. I don't work 10 or 12 hour days. Mm-hmm. I never did when I was working. I was paid well, and I worked 20 to 25 hours a week, and the mm-hmm. rest of the time, 20 hours a week, I mm-hmm. spent coaching baseball and doing what I like doing.
And that must have had a pretty big impact on somebody close to you.
Seven. I have seven that played for me,
uh-huh.
seven Major League Baseball players. There's colleges that don't have seven Major League
wow.
Baseball players.
Is that a project?
It was just fun.
But that's what unique ability is about. It's not the Matrix out there telling you what to do. It's you telling you what to do. And you find out what to do in part by what is fun for me.
Now, I want to go. We're running out of time, and I want to finish a last question, and it's going to be a different direction because it's an important direction to me. And we've talked about tasks, transformational things that we can change and projects in our mind, projects in our life. And I've been in touch with your assistant, Jen, by mm-hmm. email, mm-hmm. who speaks so kindly of your kindness and the pleasure she has in enjoying working with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you must be a very pleasant man to work with. Now, I understand that my question I'm going to ask could be a podcast on its own,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure we can keep it down. But I wonder, in your opinion, what is the role of character in venturing into a life that matters?
Well, I suppose it's not a world that I don't think a lot about character. I think about intention. I think about compassion. I think about other-centeredness. Can I tell you a little story about Jen, my
sure,
assistant?
Sure.
She was a gift to me 3 years ago. A fellow that I had known from Santa Ana Chamber of Commerce, where I was speaking. We got to know each other. He works with Goodwill and helps place people who have some limitations. And I said to him at one point, sure, I always have projects. I have lots of things that I can put people to work on, so let me know. So he called up about 3 months later and said, look, Will, I have somebody here. Now, she has a master's degree in family and marriage and family counseling. She has a bachelor's degree. She is excellent on computers, better than you and I put together. And I got to tell you, she has gone on 78 job interviews, and no one offered her anything. I said, oh, that's amazing.
After 78?
78. I said, this woman is persistent. He said, yes. She's got muscular dystrophy. She can only move two fingers on her left hand. She's in an electric wheelchair, has 24-hour nursing, has she breathes with a ventilator. But what do you think? And I said, well, I'm a good Boy Scout. I'll be happy to try. So we met. She came with her entourage of her nurse and came in with, and my first thought was, oh, my God, I'm a good Boy Scout, but is this going to work? And what I found out was that putting her to work meant that she did everything that I needed to have done. Now, I'm what's called a quick start, the Colby assessment. I'm a quick start. I jump in the pool, the deep end of the pool, and learn how to swim on the way down. She
right.
is a follow-through and a fact-finder.
Wow!
After working with her for 6 months, I said, Jen, look, you have followed through on all of these things. You've came up with facts that I needed to know to make decisions. I want you to take over my calendar because, as a consultant, as a facilitator, making all these calendar dates and somebody wants to change and move this, that's a huge amount of time. I said, I want you to take it over. She did perfectly on it. I wound up getting 35% of my time back. After January, I said, you've done such a great job. I want you to take over my email. Now, I don't know about you, but it used to be that I'd open up my email and get 90 new messages every time I opened it up. And they were all well done by marketing professionals, and they got my attention. Wow. I said, I want you to take it over. She came back a week later and said, you now have four buckets. One is your money. Anything has to do with money will go there. Another is information, and you can read that on the weekend if you want to. Another is your social things like Facebook and LinkedIn. And another one is will to respond. And if you just take care of the will to respond, that's all you need to do. I'll take care of the rest. She has narrowed down all of the things that I really didn't need to be talking to. And I found out now that I've got another 25% of the time back to me. Now, 78 people looked at her and said, we don't have a place for her.
So there, what I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm not hearing this properly, but that you have found a way in business to integrate character with competence, and that you hired her out of a good character and trying to do a good deed. She proved competent, and the character part just comes in between and flows in between the two.
After the first 2 months that she was there, I said to her, Jen, you've done such a good job. This is really, I'm impressed with all the things you're doing. And I said, now, I really want to hire you, because it was, the process was she was an intern for a year, and somebody at Goodwill paid for it. So I didn't have to pay anything the first year. And I said, Jen, you're doing such a good job. I want to hire you next September at the end of the time, the end of the internship. But, if you'll help me, maybe I can shape the job to fit you. So help me to just tell me what your limitations are. Would you spend some time next weekend and make a list of your limitations, and then let me see if I can shape the job to fit you? She said, okay. So the next Monday she came in, and I said, did you do it? She said, absolutely. I spent 3 hours making a list of all the things that are my limitations. And I said, okay, I've got my legal pad here. Tell me what they are. And she looked at me and she said, I don't have any limitations. I said, what do you mean you don't have any limitations? You can move two fingers of your left hand. You're sitting in a wheelchair. You got a ventilator. What do you mean you have no limitations? She said, I have no limitations. And out of my frustration, I said, all right, you see that big box over there? It's like 6 feet long, 3 feet high. I said, that box has 53 ring binders in it. They're tightly wrapped in bubble wrap. They need to be on, you see that space over there on the wall? That's where a bookshelf needs to go, where those books, those three-ring binders needs to go. And she said, oh, you want those three-ring binders onto a bookshelf that I'll probably have to order and assemble? I said, yeah. All right, now, I was kind of gruff.
Yeah.
And I said that. And I walked out. 3 days later, I came back, and what did I see in the office? There was the shelf that had been ordered and assembled, every three-ring binder was on it, and all the trash was gone, and every shelf had a label on it. And I said, Jen, did you do this? And she said, yes. I said, I don't believe it. How could you do that? You cannot leave your electric wheelchair. And she said, people do not understand. For 35 years, my hands and my feet have been my nurses. I have no limitations.
Wow. So she did that all herself?
her nurses did it for her.
Oh, okay.
And that's where she said, I have no limitations.
Because I have resources.
I took the resources that I need, and that's what I do. I have given her enormous amounts of responsibility, and she has done them 85-90% of the time perfectly.
Yeah, she's very kind to email
me. I have people who say to me, I am so impressed with your assistant. How do I find somebody like her?
Yeah, that's great. Paula's told me I've said the same thing. She mm-hmm. said your assistant is incredible.
Yes.
Well, we've run out of time. Well, Chris, thank you for visiting with me today. I think we have given hope to a lot of people. And given the idea, I love your idea of, I love Jen's idea. You have no limitations.
No limitations.
You have no limitations. You may have obstacles, but that is part of life.
That's what it's about.
Obstacles, and it's overcoming obstacles.
And can I suggest we get rid of another word? Hope. Abandon, that's over my session room. It says, abandon all hope. When you come in here, hope means I'm not sure I can do it because there's no failure. It's either we succeed or we're learning. And so tell me that you're going to do it, and we either achieve it or we're going to learn how to do it.
Is there a synonym that you use instead of hope?
We're going to do it.
Goal.
This is what we're going to do.
Okay, let's close with that. That there is hope can be a limiting word.
Absolutely. I'm not sure that I can do it. I'm not really committed to it. I hope I'm going to do it.
Yeah, you never see that in a vision statement, do you?
No.
We hope. As a matter of fact, when I would help companies write their vision statements, I never let them use the future.
No.
We will be.
We are.
It is not will be. We are.
We are. This is who we are. This is what we are.
And even if we're not, we read that and we read the disconnect.
And we're going to learn how to get there.
And we're
going to
get, your words, the traction to move forward.
That's right.
Thank you so much for the encouraging podcast.
Thanks for the fun.
I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.